Hello there. We're live here at Ignite 2015. There's a lot of fabulous stuff happening for IT pros, but I thought we'd sneak in a little dev love. But let's start first. By the way, this is Andrew Connell. What do you do, my friend?
I'm a web developer that focuses on the Office 365 stack.
Nice. I love developers. So Office 365 is like huge. There's tons of stuff in there. Can you give us a little overview or flavor for those that maybe haven't really used it or are interested in using it?
Absolutely, yeah. So from the customer point of view, you've got SharePoint now hosted in the cloud. You've got Exchange hosted in the cloud. You've got Skype for Business hosted in the cloud, Yammer. So it really is your Office productivity suite that Microsoft offers as a software as a service. But lately, it's been a lot of a better story too coming for developers.
So what new things can developers do, or has there been stuff been added, or has there just been stuff all along that we don't know about? Yeah. What can devs do to automate stuff in Office 365?
So one of the things that Microsoft has spent a lot of effort in, not just recently, but going back since Office 365 came out, was having a bunch of APIs for us to take advantage of. But what we've seen lately over the last few months and this week and last week has been a lot of new APIs that they've been releasing for us to get access to our data to integrate it into our business apps. So as a web developer, I could be building an application that's going to live inside of Office 365 or run in the client, or even better yet, I could build like a line of business app that consumes that data inside from Office 365 where all of my enterprise data already is for the organization, and I could bring it, surface it in the application so users have a much more in-context view of the application they're working on with their data. It's all personalized for them.
So just to get a little context for developers, what kind of stuff can you store in Office 365 aside from the documents that you would put in SharePoint? Is it just that stuff, or is there more?
So there's a lot more. So I'm going to keep it kind of short because I guess there's a ton of stuff that we can do.
Yeah, it feels like there is.
We've got lists in SharePoint, so really easy for just tabular type storage. If you're thinking like you'd use a table in a database, you can take advantage of lists. If you're looking at something really big, maybe not the best case, so you want to keep using a database. There's a new video portal where you store videos in there. It's like YouTube for the enterprise. We can get advantage of that data with a new API that's come out. We can take advantage of all of our email, calendar, contacts, all that stuff coming straight from Exchange Online as well.
Wow, so pretty much everything that you use on a daily basis as a business, you can sort of integrate.
Yeah.
So what do you have a demo of stuff we can look at right now that would be kind of cool?
Absolutely. In fact, what I did is I put together a demo that is really edgy. It's using mostly non-Microsoft technologies. And what it really does is it shows how open the Office Developer Group and Microsoft as a whole really is.
Awesome.
They don't care what technology you use, what platform or anything. So what I've done is I built a little tiny little website.
Okay.
The website runs on a Raspberry Pi. It's written in Node.js, and it'll work on Windows or OS X or Linux or whatever. It doesn't matter. Instead of trying to actually get this thing running on the Pi right in front of us, we have a fun little networking thing. So I've got a video that shows it running. What I've done here is I've actually gone in and plugged in my Pi and to the network, and my laptop is connected to the network. So on the left-hand side, what you'll see is the command window where I'm doing a scan for all open ports, port 22, to find my device. This is why we're not doing it here live, because we have a couple thousand devices we get to filter through. Once I found it, now I know the IP address. I'm going to go log into the actual device. And once I log into the device, putting in my super secret password, what you'll see is I'm going from my laptop that's shown there in red, now I'm on the Raspberry Pi.
Got it.
So from here, see what's on the device. I can see that I've got something on the desktop. I can check to see that Node.js is installed. It's a recent version, build 12, version 0.12. I can actually see all the different Node packages that I've installed globally that I'm going to take advantage of on the Raspberry Pi. Now, while this is doing this, on the right-hand side, I've got a browser window open that's running on my laptop. And so once I fire off the web server over here on the console window on the left, I'll go navigate to the actual site from my laptop so that I can see both devices. Here I'm going through, jumping into the actual application, and then I'm just going to jump into the directory there where the app is, show you all the contents, and now we'll just say, make sure we have the right IP address here. This is number 104, or IP.104.
Mm-hmm.
Last thing here, let's fire up the web server. So here it shows that the web server is firing up. Raspberry Pi is going to kick in. There we see it's running on port 3000. So now back to my laptop, I can just go through, plug in the IP address, port 3000, and there you go. I got a website running on Node, running through Node on the Pi, showing the site. Now the cool part about this is that you see I'm going to go log in. This is integrated with Azure Active Directory. So I just jumped from the Raspberry Pi device. I just went to Azure AD to log in. This is just a little piece here showing you that I've actually saving the session values for storing all the access tokens and stuff in the application. I'm storing it in a file, right on the file system. Probably not the best thing to do in production, but works great for a demo.
Yeah, it does. So just to get a little context, what you've done is you've written a Node.js server. Mm-hmm. You're running it from the Pi, and the Pi is integrated with Office 365 somehow.
Absolutely, yep. Yeah, and so what it's done here, we've actually logged into Azure AD. You can see there on the left-hand side, it's just writing out the different paths as the web server gets those requests. And if I refresh this, we'll even see that now, right in the middle there, I now have a resource ID for the Azure Active Directory graph and an access token to go query and get information about who just logged in, what they're, who they work for, and all that.
Interesting. And so it seems like the first thing you ever have to do anything in Office 365 is log in.
You do, because everything at Office 365 is backed by Azure AD. So all the authentication happens with Azure AD. A first-class directory. If you're on-prem, you can set up a hybrid connection. You can sync to it, so your on-prem directory from your corporate environment is replicated up in Azure AD. So you can do single sign-on, log into Azure AD, and then anything that trusts Azure AD, like Office 365, or in my case, that my website here that I've created, can actually go in, use the same access token for a nice single sign-on, and take advantage of it wherever you really are.
I think the cool thing here also is that we have used the most foreign thing we could ever use as part of the demo to show even this little device now has access tokens to get into Office 365 using the login authentication stuff.
Exactly, yeah. And I mean, I let the demo keep going, and what you'll see here is that now I'm using this thing called the Office 365 Discovery Service that tells the user all the stuff that they have access to. The next time I click on a link there on the View My Services, what you see there on the left-hand side is that it didn't have access, or it didn't have a credential to get into that service. So what you'll see is it says no credential found in the session cache. What it did behind the scenes is it made a request back to Azure AD and said, I'm looking for an access token to get into the directory service. It knew that I was already authenticated, so it gave me a credential, saved it in cache, redirected me back to this page, and you see at the bottom there, it says, now I found the credential, made the request out to the Office 365 to get that actual, to get the data from the directory service, and there's the credential sitting there for the discovery service in the session state.
That's remarkable. And to me, I mean, like when I think Office 365, I think Word docs and Excel, but when you get into the Exchange stuff, now you can start to do scheduling in a really good way.
You really can. And it's been really cool to see not only extending Office 365, but also extending the Office clients, Word, Outlook, Excel. They have a whole extensibility model where you basically just build a website, have a single XML file that you give to the Office client that knows how to go pull all the information out of the hosting app and to share it with your web app, wherever that's running, to have a really clean extensibility story. And the cool thing is that once you install one of those apps, inside one of those add-ins inside of one of the Office clients, it's going to work wherever apps are supported or add-ins are supported. So if I install an add-in for Outlook, it's going to work in the Outlook web client, my Windows client, my iOS client, my Mac client. It doesn't matter. Or all those places where apps where add-ins are supported, it'll show up all of them, one app install.
That's amazing. Now, how do they do that? I mean, it feels like a little bit of black magic, but as devs, we're like, there's no such thing as black magic, only to our customers when we do it, right?
Yeah, it's actually really elegant what they've done. So you build a website, and then this is part for the Office add-in. So you build a website, and it's just HTML, CSS, and JavaScript.
That's why.
Right? If you want to do anything server-side, by all means, go for it, but it doesn't matter what you're using. I mean, I've got the Node.js doing a session
on a Pi, right?
On a Pi, yeah, and I could run it there. The XML file tells the hosting app what permissions the website needs so that when the user goes to install the app, they have to grant it consent to do those things.
Got it.
And then you also get some other stuff to where it says, like, I have one add-in that looks at all the words in an email, anything that has spaces on either side and starts with an uppercase letter, it's a candidate for someone's last name. So my add-in uses a regular expression, finds all of those words, takes them all, submits them to a Node.js REST API service, sends it off to Salesforce, grabs the data back of potential matches, and then shows them right in line in my email so that I don't have to leave my email.
That's amazing.
To find what's going on. I can see the information that I need, like I said earlier, the information that I need to work with is right in line with where I'm working. There's no copy, paste, go search somewhere else, forget where I am.
And you know, the crazy thing is that almost, I'll say all businesses use Word docs, Excel docs, Exchange. Now you can, instead of just having to put stuff in the share, now you can do really innovative stuff with your business if you're a developer. Now, How hard is it to do that login stuff?
It's not really that hard. Let me show you some of the code here. If I come over here, now all of this is written in TypeScript, compiles down to JavaScript. Honestly, TypeScript is the only server-side technology from Microsoft that I'm using in this sample here.
Oh, that's awesome.
And it's not even server-side. But I'll show you the auth piece. If I come over here into this Azure AD piece, and scroll down a little bit, what I've got is I have a little configuration file. So this configuration file has two templates over here, one for what the URLs look like to go to Azure AD to authenticate. So I'm going to grab this value, and you see I'm using these like double handlebar notation. Those are going to be things that are going to get replaced. If I come over and look at this, you see I'm going to get a reference to the endpoint. The way that Azure AD authentication works, there's multiple OAuth flows that we can take advantage of. And one of the more popular ones when users are involved is the authorization code flow.
Got it.
Now, the cool thing about that is that when you go to the website and the website says, I need you to log in, it redirects you over to Azure. Azure goes and grabs an access, you log in, and Azure returns back to the application something called an authorization code.
Got it.
What's cool about that, I never gave my username and password to the app. I gave it to Azure, who I trust. I give essentially this authorization code, and that says, hey, application, you can go to Azure AD, and you can now go get a token on my behalf, but you haven't seen my permissions. You just get a special key that Azure said, here you go.
That's great, because storing passwords is a liability.
I don't want to know it.
Yeah.
And a couple and companies have said that.
And if someone says, hey, I can't log in, it's like, wait, I don't have your password. I don't want your password.
Exactly, yeah. So in this case here, I'm building up the endpoint. I'm building up the endpoint for going through and doing the authentication. You have things here like the tenant ID, that's the GUID of your Azure Active Directory directory. The client ID is the name of the ID of the application that I created.
Right.
The redirect URI, when you log in, where do you go back to? Come back to my application. And the state is just something that I create before I send it to Azure, and when it comes back, it has the same value so I can protect against anybody trying to hijack the request.
Got it. So quick question. Is a client ID something you have to register as a developer on O365?
It's not with Office 365. You go to Azure AD, and like you can create users, you can also create applications.
Got it.
Applications have properties like a name, a logo picture, secret password secrets and keys, the redirect URL, and the permissions that it needs access to.
Got it.
That the user can delegate rights to. If I scroll down a little bit farther here, I'm going to do the, this is going to do the authorization. It's going to redirect, see where am I real quick. Credential, get the access token. I think it's right in here. So I've sent the user over to Azure AD to go authenticate. And when that came back, I got the authorization code. Then I went back and sent them to the access token. This right here, this piece, is actually coming in and saving the access token that came back from Azure AD. Now, the cool part of what this is, of what's going on here, let me find this one little bit. I think it's right in here. You see this object here called Azure AD.
Uh-huh.
What the Azure AD team has done, if I scroll to the very top, is they've created a, Azure AD, AD graph.
I see a class right there, Azure AD. Is that what you're looking for?
Here's the class right here, but there's a thing I'm using here called ADAL-node. Uh-huh. And what that's doing is it's a library, a package that the Azure AD guys have provided that allows me to do authentication against Azure AD without having to go through and write all the plumbing logic and everything.
Oh, that's so nice.
Yeah, I just go through and set up the application and say, use the same ADAL, Azure Active Directory application library. They've got it for .NET, they've got it for Node, they're putting all these different clients, and I'm using the similar syntax that I would use in .NET inside of Node to go pull those things out.
That's
really
slick. That's fantastic. So in essence, now that you have access to O365 and your application wants to read certain things, now you can really do whatever you want.
You really can. And then, so over here, here's a controller. I was trying to find it a second ago. This is the authentication piece I was trying to find a second ago, this ADAL-node. This other part over here, this auth stuff, that was just a class that I have for Azure AD. But just to kind of show you where it was, on the login, right, the auth get, this is where the request comes back from Azure AD to get the authorization code. So down here, getting the authorization token for a specific resource. A resource being a specific API endpoint.
Got it.
So now, back to your question, on the thing called the discovery service, when I want to get data coming back, get data from one of these different APIs, in this case here, I'm using a discovery service, and I've got a little controller that I've set up called the discovery controller.
Just to back up, Discover Controller is the thing that says this is what you have access to in O365.
Yeah, so the Discovery service is something that we have in 365 that gives me two different things. Either one, here's everything that the Discovery service knows about, and then two, here's everything that we know about that you have access to.
Got it.
So it essentially is going to tell me what things have people granted my app permissions to inside of my Azure AD application.
Perfect.
So in here, I'll scroll down a little bit, and let's look at, where's the part where, here's where I'm getting all the services. So here, I'm checking to see, is the current user authenticated? If they're not, we'll redirect them over to the login page for our site, which handles the whole Azure AD process. And then I keep a little thing in a cookie that says, hey, where did you come from when you did the login? I'll send you right back to the same page.
Got it.
A little user-friendly thing. A little bit farther down, this is where you're creating that, where you're actually defining that request. So go to the Discovery Controller, get the service endpoint, we saw that a second ago, and then it's going to go /all services, and I'm only looking for specific fields coming back. It's going to grab, it's going to say, here's the contacts API, and here's his resource ID, and here's this, and here's this, and here's this, and there's this. That was the first page that I went to, but the one that gets a little interesting is when I come down here to the My Services, because not only am I going to issue this request, but I also need to make sure then I pass in an authorization header to say, hey, I'm going to give you a bearer token, an OAuth2 access token.
Right.
That's where the authentication happens. I make the request right here on line 198, parse the data, and then I'm just going to walk back and create a collection of all of the different capabilities that are available to
that
me.
That you requested above.
And yeah.
This is awesome. Now, it feels overwhelming. There's got to be tons of APIs. Where can people go to discover the kinds of things that they can do?
Yeah, so the Office developer team has done a really good job at putting out a lot of documentation already out there. So
got it.
First stop, dev.office.com. There's a getting started link where you can get all the tools and get up to speed. There's a bunch of training resources too. The documentation resources, there's a whole piece on the REST API and working with the raw REST API on all the different calls you need to make. So because I'm doing this through Node.js, there's not a native SDK for me to work with Node.js. There's actually a few guys on the team that I've noticed are starting to put some Node.js packages in the NPM registry.
That's
for
awesome.
365 APIs. But it's cool because that site not only has all the different documentation for the REST API, but also the other .NET SDKs, that are the .NET and the iOS, the Android, Cordova, Xamarin APIs. But then what's crazy is they also have this thing called the API sandbox. And just straight from the website, you can see the kind of request that's going to be made and hit click try it, and it makes the request for you, and
that's
it shows
awesome.
You the data response from a test tenant or from your Office 365 tenant.
So if you're using Office or Office 365, which is pretty much everyone in the universe,
yep.
You can do tons of cool stuff if you're a dev to automate some of the processes that you do in your business.
You really can. And this I've got a little sandbox that I like to jump on and explain something that, today in the cloud world, we have things like infrastructure as a service, we call it IaaS. We have platform as a service for different building blocks to build our applications. I think of Office 365 now as a real developer platform. I call it EPaaS. It's Enterprise Platform as a Service.
That's
because
cool.
I don't have to use all the out-of-the-box features of Office 365, but as a developer, I've got all these business-related services that I can integrate into my application that give me a leg up on what a lot of people are doing, document management and workflow and metadata and all that stuff. I can take advantage of it because there's APIs that are already there. Why should I worry about building all that logic when
Perfect.
Somebody else is doing it for the enterprise?
That's awesome. So just to finish up, is this code available somewhere? Is it going to be put somewhere?
Absolutely. So I have a GitHub repository. I can pull that up for you real quick. But if you, let's see, if I just go to github.com/AndrewConnell, there is a repository that you see here called Prez 0365
awesome.
Node, and the one that I just showed was this Node 0365 web. And then
Fantastic.
If you go to my blog, just my name, there's a couple posts up there that show how to get this working on a Pi.
Well, Andrew, thanks so much for spending some time with us. This is pretty cool. I'm actually excited to start looking at it. You guys, thanks for watching. Again, we're here at Ignite 2015, and we will catch you next time. Take care, guys.
Bye.